Wonderful. Okay, so I promise to keep things brief since our ending time is right now. But if you need to go, if you have other commitments, I understand it is game day. I don't know what time the game is.
3:00.
Okay, and I passed the team on their way. We passed, and I waved. They said hello and that they're going to beat Georgia today. So everything's good. So all right. Let's talk about Project Rachel. First, I'll just tell you the three things I'm going to talk about so you can kind of know when we'll be finished. So first, we're going to look at what the church says to women who've experienced an abortion, the church's response to those suffering with grief, and then what Project Rachel Ministry is, and then what it looks like here in our diocese. Okay. So in Evangelium Vitae, Pope John Paul II said this. Now, if I'm reading it, can you hear me if I'm turning this way to read it?
Yes.
Okay. The church is aware of the many factors which may have influenced your decision, and she does not doubt that in many cases it is a painful and even shattering decision. The wound in your heart may not yet have been healed. Certainly, what happened was and remains terribly wrong. But do not give in to discouragement and do not lose hope. Try rather to understand what happened and face it honestly. If you have not already done so, give yourself over with humility and trust to repentance. The Father of Mercies is ready to give you his forgiveness and his peace in the sacrament of reconciliation. To the same Father and his mercy, you can, with sure hope, entrust your child. With the friendly and expert help and advice of other people, and as a result of your own painful experience, you can be among the most eloquent defenders of everyone's right to life. Through your commitment to life, whether by accepting the birth of the child or by welcoming and caring for those most in need of someone to be close to them, you will become promoters of a new way of looking at human life. Pope Benedict said this, "The church, after the example of her divine teacher, always has the people themselves before her, especially the weakest and most innocent who are victims of injustice and sin, and also those other men and women who, having perpetrated these acts, stained by sin and wounded within, are seeking peace and the chance to begin anew. The church's first duty is to approach these people with love and consideration, with caring and motherly attention, to proclaim the merciful closeness of God in Jesus Christ. Indeed, as fathers teach, it is he who is the true God, good Samaritan, who has made himself close to us, who pours oil and wine on our wounds and takes us into the inn, the church, where he has treated and trusting us to her ministries and personally paying in advance for our recovery. This is the spirit of the church reaching out to men and women who've experienced an abortion, a heart of mercy, as you'll see on cards that should have been passed out to you. This is the heart of the church towards those who have been involved in abortion. This is the same heart that that we should be moving our heart to be able to open our hearts to the men and women who have experienced an abortion and welcome them into the merciful embrace of the church. And lastly, Pope Francis said on September 1st, I have another quote by him later on. The tragedy of abortion is experienced by some with a superficial awareness, as if not realizing the extreme harm that such an act entails. Many others, on the other hand, although experiencing this moment as a defeat, believe they have no other option. I think in particular of all the women who have resorted to abortion. I am well aware of the pressure that has led them to this decision. I know that it is an existential and moral ordeal. I have met so many women who bear in their heart the scar of this agonizing and painful decision. What has happened is profoundly unjust. Yet, Only understanding the truth of it can enable one not to lose hope. The forgiveness of God cannot be denied to those who has repented, especially when that person approaches the sacrament of confession with a sincere heart in order to obtain reconciliation with the Father. So hopefully that will give you an understanding of where we as the church are coming from to when approaching men and women who have experienced an abortion. We in no way shy away from the reality that a grave injustice did in fact happen. But that's not our focus. That's not our sole focus when we're approaching men and women who've experienced an abortion. Our focus is on being a vessel of God's mercy to this person, and helping them to embrace, helping them to receive the mercy of God. Men and women who've experienced an abortion often think that they have committed the unforgivable sin. They haven't. God's mercy and forgiveness are totally available to them at every moment, as they are to all of us. And so it's so important to move towards these people with a heart of compassion and a heart of mercy, because it can be very tempting to be angry about the action that they participated in, that they were pressured into, or that they may have procured on their own, which I want to say, very rarely does someone completely have full knowledge of what they're doing in procuring an abortion. So just want to throw that out there. The majority of people who have experienced an abortion, participated in abortion, are not fully aware of the gravity of what they have participated in, procured, or encouraged. Okay, so now that we've heard from our last three, or first, or present pope and the last two popes, what does the church have then in response to this? So, in the United States of America, we have a ministry called Project Rachel. This is the Catholic Church's ministry to those who have been involved in abortion. It's a diocesan-based network of specially trained priests, religious counselors, and laypersons who provide a team response of care for those suffering from the aftermath of abortion. In addition to referring for sacramental reconciliation, we provide an integrated network of services, including pastoral counseling, support groups, retreats, and referrals to licensed mental health professionals. That's the ideal. That's the goal, for a diocese to be able to provide all of this and to have this team response. So a little bit of history now. Oh, wait, let me play a video for you. Maybe. Okay, maybe not. Sorry, I will not play a video for you. Ooh. Okay. Sorry, I'm like a Mac person. So, and this was given to me by my office, which I'm very grateful for, but I don't really know how to use it. Okay, so the history of Project Rachel, it began in 1984 by a woman named Vicki Thorne. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She was speaking with a friend who said to her, "I can live with an adoption decision. I can't live with an abortion." And so, and this woman had experienced an abortion. And so she wanted to make sure that all of these women who have experienced this, specifically this was geared towards women, because there wasn't a lot of research at that point regarding men and abortion. But thanks to Dr. Rue, there's tons of research out there now. So she knew that it needed an anonymity component, a spiritual component, and a psychotherapeutic component. And then in 2009, the U.S. Bishops' Conference purchased the program from Vicki Thorne I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. She started going out to different dioceses and training people, different areas of the U.S. It wasn't always linked with the diocese. Training people, Dr. Rue would go around with her as well, to train people to be able to have an integrated approach to healing for men and women. And then in 2009, the USCCB purchased the program from her, and she sold it to them so that she could continue to develop other things and that this program would continue on with good support. Okay, so since then, I thought I had more research for you or more history for you. Sorry about that. Okay, well, another thing that you should know, Rachel, where does the name Rachel come from? Many people ask. It comes from the book of Jeremiah when he prophesies the slaughtering of the holy innocents, when King Herod slaughtered the innocents when Jesus was a boy trying to kill the Messiah. Thus says the Lord, in Ramah is heard the sound of moaning and bitter weeping. Rachel mourns for her children. She refuses to be consoled because her children are no more. Thus says the Lord, cease your cries of mourning. Wipe the tears from your eyes. There is hope for your future. And so that is the message we want to bring to those who've experienced this. There's hope for your future. Okay, so what is Project Rachel? This is a chart to kind of show the integrated approach of healing that this program is comprised of. So this bottom half is kind of like the first step in getting a Project Rachel established in a diocese. So first, Christ is the foundation. And then these four elements, prayer support, training, confidential response, and outreach and awareness, are the first four main components that are essential in order to lay the foundation to have a strong ministry. And that's where we are, and I'll get to that in a little bit. And then the next three, these next three, coordination, staff and volunteer network, professional counseling, mental health, and referrals, and then reconciliation, priest ministry, and referral. And we are, as a diocese, we're stepping into that area, and we're getting that going a little bit more. And then finally, the last three beads in the top corner, pastoral and spiritual guidance, liturgies and retreats, and support groups is where we're headed in the future. So this is the integrated approach to healing for men and women who've experienced an abortion. So what does that look like on a day-to-day basis? I have a cell phone that sits on my desk, and a woman or a man can call, and I will answer it, but, you know, if I'm available during my hours. It's not a crisis line. It's a resource line. And I will receive whatever they have to share. And then I'll connect them with a therapist or a priest, depending on, you know, I'll screen and kind of to see where they are with their process of grief and what would be the best resource for them. And so we're meeting them where they are, and we're not putting them in a box. Like they don't have to fit into a cookie cutter box of healing. It's very personal. It's very individualized. And I think that's a very beautiful element to the pro-life movement, is focusing on the importance of the individual and their needs and their uniqueness. And so that's what we're doing here when we receive those phone calls. And then we're able to connect them with the resources that that they need. So that is kind of an overview of what Project Rachel is. And then I think I forgot to mention this. When the U.S. Bishops' Conference purchased Project Rachel, that essentially at that point, that made it so that any bishop who is who has post-abortion healing ministry in their diocese that the bishop is directly supporting or directly overseeing, that is called Project Rachel Ministry. Now, it looks different in every diocese because we like individuals and how unique they are. Every diocese is unique. Every, you know, area is unique. Every parish is unique. And so in some dioceses, it looks, it has kind of follows one format. In other dioceses, it follows another. And we're in that kind of discovery stage of what does it look like here in our diocese, so that we can make sure that we are offering all of the resources that are, you know, out there and connecting men and women to the mercy of the Lord. Okay, so a little history on how Project Rachel has kind of come about in our diocese. I was trying to figure out exactly when things started here in our diocese, but it was probably in the early 90s. It might even date back a little bit further than that. The woman, two people before me, Bonnie Siever, she was good friends with Vicki Thorne. So she had the training come through and all of this stuff. And I don't have a date on when that was going on. So the ministry was functioning in our diocese up until 2011, when Lorraine Allaire, my predecessor, retired. And then I came on board part-time. I was living here in Gainesville, working in Jacksonville, and, you know, fresh out of college, like, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And so it just wasn't possible to be able to really have this ministry running with me only being part-time and trying to manage everything. And there were some other ministries that had kind of needed to take a pause. So it went dormant in 2011. And in 2013, Pope Francis said this: "I see clearly that the thing the church needs most today is the ability to heal wounds and warm the hearts of the faithful. It needs nearness, proximity. I see the church as a field hospital after battle. You have to heal their wounds. Then we can talk about everything else. Heal the wounds, and you have the start from, and you have to start from the ground up." So when he said this in the America magazine, I think it was, everyone was buzzing about it. And my boss and I were talking about it as well. And, you know, we realized, okay, it's been 2 years. This ministry's been dormant. The church is hemorrhaging. So many men and women in who are Catholic and who aren't Catholic have experienced an abortion. And what is out there for them? And so that's when we decided, that was in the fall of 2013, that we needed to definitely focus attention to this. And so so then I attended a USCCB training, and then a year later we were able to form a committee, which Dr. Rue was on, and some others. And so we are now in the process of, you know, getting this off the ground and up and running. And unfortunately, you know, there are so many facets of Respect Life ministry, and everything is crying for attention. I mean, the human person is... there's so many different attacks on human life, and there's so much attention that needs to be given to each facet, and this is a very important one. My time has just not been there to be able to devote to it. So please pray for me. Please pray for this ministry, that we can really get this off the ground and running. And kind of the next thing that we want to do is a big advertising campaign. This April, I had a great victory. I was able to set up the phone line, the confidential phone line for the diocese. And a big element to that, just a little side story, was getting the right phone number, something that's short and easy and repetitive numbers, because you don't want something that's like crazy and no one can remember. So we have the phone line. The woman at the AT&T store was so sweet, and we went through like 20 different phone numbers that were available, and we found this one. So it's on the back of the prayer card that you received. Let's see. So here we go. Here's the dedicated phone line. And this phone line is only for Project Rachel Ministry. If someone calls this phone, they will only be treated in response to an abortion experience. If you need to get in contact with me about other things, I have an office phone number. I can give you that phone number, but you know, this phone number is dedicated just for Project Rachel. And then we also have a website, and we're linked into the national website for Project Rachel, which is hopeafterabortion.com. All of that information should be on the pamphlets that you received. So if you don't have a pen, don't worry. It's in your materials. Okay, so let's see. How can you help? First of all, and I made this plea before, we need help with prayer for the ministry. If you could please pray for this ministry. I've never experienced more spiritual warfare with a facet of my job than I have with this. Literally, like, everything exploded in my office yesterday. I wasn't able to pull this presentation together until 7 a.m. this morning. Like, when I went into my office this morning, I wanted to print out more prayer cards for you all so that you could all have two, and I have more, so please take another one when you leave, but so that you can hand one to someone that you know, ask them to pray. But the file wasn't linked, and I couldn't print it, and I was just like, ugh. So, you know, we had a priest workshop last November, and the entire system started to melt down on Dr. Curley as she was trying to give her presentation, and then it was just a mess. And so it's so apparent to me that the evil one does not want these women and men to receive the mercy of God. He wants them to remain in darkness. He wants them to remain in fear and in hiding. He does not want the light of Jesus Christ to shine in their hearts. And so that's why this ministry, it's crucial that we pray for this ministry and that we pray for men and women who've experienced an abortion, because he wants us to be separated. He wants us to be divided from God. And this is, you know, it's a mortal sin. And so it's a huge division between the woman and God. And once a man or a woman has received the words of absolution and they have been forgiven of their sins by God, they don't always feel like they've been forgiven. And they still carry around this burden of feeling like something's not resolved yet. And that's why we need to offer the psychological and emotional support to help them walk through this process. Because it's more than just a spiritual, it's more than just a spiritual healing and restoration that needs to take place. Okay, so that's the end of my presentation. I'm sorry I was a little all over the place. Thank you for bearing with me. But I'd be happy to take any questions. Yeah.
Mary Catherine, great presentation. Do they have to be Catholic?
No, they do not have to be Catholic.
What do you do with the reconciliation part?
So that's why my first point is I refer them to a counselor most of the time. And then that therapist can be in contact with me and say, hey, can we connect with a priest or something like that? And I can definitely help make that connection. Or the therapist can say, I think it's time for a retreat, or I think it's time for whatever. But they're going to be, we really rely on our therapists and counselors that we have to be able to gauge when the appropriate time is. So a discussion Dr. Rue and I have been having is when is the right time for someone to go to reconciliation after they've had an abortion? And, you know, some of the thoughts that he shared with me is that it's not the first step. Necessarily. It shouldn't necessarily be the first step. It should be a little bit further down the road because of what I just said, so many men and women go to reconciliation, receive the words of absolution, are restored spiritually with God, but they don't feel restored emotionally, psychologically. They're still carrying the burden because it needs to be addressed. And so it's good and helpful to be able to start walking through that journey and then have reconciliation enter in when the time is right for them.
But if they're non-Catholic, sure. Do they go to the retreat?
So we, the diocese is not offering retreats. There is an independent organization called Rachel's Vineyard. I know the names are really similar. I even mix them up sometimes. So there's an independent group called Rachel's Vineyard. They offer retreats. They're also open to people who are not Catholic to attend. But there are a lot of Catholic elements in there. I believe they do have a time for reconciliation, a time for Eucharistic adoration. But they definitely allow people who are not Catholic to attend. Sure.
I understand Rachel's Vineyard has retreats of some sort.
Sure. So Rachel's Vineyard...
When and where do these occur?
Okay. So Rachel's Vineyard is a retreat program, a retreat-only program. Okay. And they offer retreats... there is a group of people in our diocese who offer retreats, and the location, I guess that is public knowledge. They take place in St. Augustine or in Jacksonville, the rest is, is not publicized. You don't need to know it if you don't need to know it. If someone is going to go on the retreat, they'll be told where it is for anonymity and confidentiality's sake. But there is, their contact information is available. I saw one brochure on the back table, but it's just rachelsvineyard.org. And then the information for Jackie Love should be on there if you're interested in having that information available too. Yeah.
I think they usually have it on the Catholic magazine.
Okay. Sure. So those dates are probably on their website too. Yeah.
Even on the church bulletins sometimes.
Good. Okay. Good.
So just to distinguish between the two.
Sure.
Project Rachel is where a person will call and they will set up a confidential one-on-one counseling session with the counselor as much or as long as that person wants to be involved, right? Mm-hmm. Rachel's Vineyard is just a one weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
you're the diocese is affiliated to Project Rachel,
correct.
Not Rachel's Vineyard per correct. Se. They're not opposed to it, but it's not.
Correct. Some dioceses have Rachel's Vineyard as a part of their circle, their like integrated approach. We're just not there yet. And for now they're remaining separate. That group is doing their ministry .
Do you know if there's been any training for priests in Project Rachel so that if a priest in different parishes, a person comes to them and says they've had an abortion, what would a priest do? Would they refer to that number that you gave them? Or would they themselves begin the process?
Sure. So we had a, in preparation for the Year of Mercy, last November we had a workshop on post-abortion healing awareness for all the priests of the diocese. It was at Marywood, and not all of them attended. Naturally, everyone has a very full schedule. We were able to offer education for them in that point. There will be, as this ministry is able to develop more and more and we're able to have deeper roots, we will be offering a priest training specifically for priests to be able to walk men and women through the healing process who might not need to go to a therapist. And then also, for training in the confessional. We have also made available to all of the priests the prayer cards that you have received. Some of the cards that I handed out, because I was having trouble with my printer this morning, some of them are a card that says, like, please pray for this ministry. And then on the bottom it says, to take a step in towards healing, here's the phone number. The other cards are specifically for people who've experienced an abortion. It says on the back, you are not alone, and then a little explanation of why you're not alone, and that there is hope and help. So those are the cards that we have for to hand out at the abortion facility, to our hope is also for priests to be able to carry them in the confessional and then hand them to someone who they've spoken to in the confessional, so that they can take a step towards healing.
And how do you decide who does the counseling? Dr. had mentioned that some of the counselors do not have credentials. So what are their qualifications, or how do you find therapists for people to go through?
I didn't hear him say
about
that.
Counselors at Planned Parenthood.
Okay.
Not having credentials.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
So
we screen the therapists and we decide, you know, who we're going to be able to refer someone to. We have a relationship with them. They have been through a special training for this. Unfortunately, in the world of education for therapists, abortion is not talked about. It's not brought up as something that could be emotionally detrimental to a human person. And so a lot of therapists out there haven't made the connection. And so, you know, in the future, we hope to be able to offer a training specifically for therapists. And then from there, we would, you know, build a relationship with them and see if we can refer to them.
Does Bishop Estevez envision, or is it the ideal that every woman that's had an abortion in some way pass through Project Rachel?
That would be incredible if something like that could happen. And that's why, you know, up in D.C. they have, like, massive PR campaigns. They're on the radio, they're on buses, it's on, you know, on billboards, the phone number, and they're... Their Project Rachel office they're doing incredible things up in D.C., you know, so that's kind of like our...
But that would really be up to the individual priests, wouldn't it, who are hearing, they're the first point of contact, right, when the woman seeks, or I guess not for those who haven't gone to confession first.
Yeah, but you kind of have two demographics.
They might be the first person of contact, and then it would be up to them to encourage the penitent to... continue the process, the psychological healing process,
sure,
as opposed to the spiritual healing process,
sure,
with Project Rachel.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
First, thank you for what you're doing and all you do. I have a question about seminarians and training.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we had a Bethesda healing ministry with Project Rachel up in Columbus, and the seminarians served as like interns and volunteers, and they had to go through, it was part of their training.
That's
Do you have
beautiful.
Any plans for that, or are the seminarians a part of any of this?
I hope so. Yeah, and you know, as we continue to move forward, absolutely. It is so important for them to have that training. And even if they don't become priests, and that's not their true vocation, this is an incredible experience for them to have another understanding of the facet of the church. Thank you for sharing that about the Bethesda ministry and everything.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. I think it's a really powerful, from, you know, the people I know that were involved with it, it was a really powerful experience for the seminarians.
Yeah, wonderful. I know Father David Ruchinski, when he was a seminarian, was involved with Rachel's Vineyard retreats in assisting on those as well. So it's not, it has been done in the past.
What's the cost involved for these young women? I mean, is it for free?
The cost?
Yeah.
It depends on which therapist they see, and you know, there's a sliding scale.
They have to pay on their own, or the diocese?
Yeah, currently there's not any funds that we as the diocese can offer to subsidize, but that's something that we do need to be able to... Yeah.
Seeking.
Right. Yeah. So that's where another component comes in, is funding. You know, if you know of anyone who would be interested in supporting this ministry, in the longevity of this ministry, we need funds to be able to make sure that the time... that there's specific time dedicated to this ministry, and then also that there's funds for those to receive the psychological and emotional assistance that they need, and if they can't pay for it, that shouldn't be a stumbling block. Yeah, it shouldn't be. That's the direction we want to move in. Yeah, sure.
Is there any educational program
for young adults before they have to or think they need to have an abortion, whether it's, you know, on sexuality, whatever. Is there a Catholic program for young adults?
There are a lot out there across the nation. A number of them are coming to mind for me. The Chastity Project is a big one that Jason Everett is a part of, and educating young people. He goes into schools and speaks and whatnot about theology of the body and things of that nature. There's a number of people who, out there doing that for youth ministry, for sure. The diocese just started.
The one that they're doing in the seventh grade?
Yep. So the diocese this summer, or this fall, just began a ministry called, or a educational approach called Created for Greatness. And they're teaching, did you say seventh graders?
And parents.
And parents about sexuality. So they're doing like...
Purity Pledge, right?
There's
going to
be one here at St. Madeline's in January, I think.
Great.
January, February.
Okay. I'm not involved with the logistics and behind the scenes stuff, so I've seen advertisements for it, but I can't remember all the dates and everything. But yeah, what it is, it's a 1-day workshop where they're with the teens all morning and early afternoon, and they have a break, and then the parents come, and then they receive catechesis together as parents and teens together for seventh graders. They also, that's for those who aren't in the Catholic schools. I believe there's also a program specifically for those in Catholic schools as well. So,
how do we get these resources for the seventh grade? Because I would like to pass this to my seventh grade students.
Seventh
created
grade.
For greatness. Go to the website, the diocesan created for greatness.
Okay.
Is
okay.
The program.
So, if you go to DOSA, FL, Diocese of St. Augustine, Florida, DOSAFL.com, you can find the information on the website. The contact person is Aaron McGeever, and they're looking for catechists to be trained in the Created for Greatness program so that they can offer it more widely. So, and the training, I believe, is all online. The training is all online, I think, and they're, I think right now is kind of the cutoff. So good question, timely. Hope that it all works out. I hope you can get involved. Okay, one more question and then we'll break because we're after 12:30 here.
It's more of a suggestion. You were lamenting the lack of funds. I would put the word donate under volunteer.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And we're, donations can be made out to DCFL, Diocesan Center for Family Life, with post-abortion healing or whatever in the memo line. Project Rachel, whatever you
want to
put
that
in.
That warrants a second frame, just a whole other slide.
Okay. Great. All right, we'll put it right there. Thank you all so much for your time.
Don't forget the literature, the gift shop, the Love Edge t-shirts.